Search your killer. Wonderful, isn't it? Pheromone signature left by his body. These are scent molecules. 10 years ago, one of his kind stalked and eliminated an elite special forces crew in Central America. There were two survivors. They indicated that when trapped, the creature activated a self-destruct device that destroyed enough rainforest to cover 300 city blocks. Remarkable weaponry. That's right, Lieutenant. Otherworld life forms.
Huh?
A fucking alien. Iwo Jima, Cambodia, Beirut, drawn by heat and conflict. He's on safari. Lions, the tigers, the bears. Oh my.
Welcome to the Three Men and a Retrospective Podcast. Look at the Predator film series. Join Garrett.
We are a rescue team, not assassins.
Adam.
You son of a bitch.
And Matt.
How'd you snag a ticket on this shitmobile?
As they get themselves to the analysis chopper and review each Predator film not yet covered here at Percolated Media.
So why don't you use the regular army? What do you need us for?
Because some damn fool accused you of being the best.
If you would like to hear the co-host views on the Alien vs. Predator films and Prey, check out our Percolated Media archives as the films were reviewed back in 2022.
This is getting better by the minute.
So stick around, podcast listeners.
Guess who's back?
The Percolated Media Predator Retrospective begins now.
Grab a seat. Enjoy the show. This is history.
Predator, Killer of Killers, released on Hulu on June 6, 2025, and this had a budget of $50 million and is directed by Dan Trachtenberg. All right, guys, after last week's completely evisceration of The Predator, we are here at Killer of Killers, and if people are wondering, well, there was a Predator movie in between. Yes, there was. Go back. By this point, we would probably posted it on our Facebook feed so that people can catch up. We did review Prey way back when. Guys, I did re-listen to that review, and I did re-watch that movie leading into this, and for as much praise as that movie got, we were not amongst all that praise. Matt, did you revisit Prey? Do you remember how hard we were on it?
Well, I was the nicest. I gave it a 7. Uh-huh. I don't think it's the greatest thing ever made, but considering the track record of this franchise, I thought it was a vast improvement over a lot of what we had gotten, and I still maintain that opinion.
Adam, same?
I've grown to like it even better, especially looking at all these other films and the way that we've done. I think you and I gave it a 6, if I remember right. So we didn't hate it. I think expectations kind of lowered our score a little bit because everybody talked about the greatest Predator movie out there right up with the first one. And it's not, but it does a lot of things right. And I think, and it shows here, and it shows the movie that we're going to do next in this series, it has changed the trajectory of the Predator franchise. And I will give the writer and director Trachtenberg some pretty big credit for that. Because he's definitely got a boost to a franchise that was DOA for a lot of people.
It was DOA. It was back in people's good graces. So what does he do? He fucking matrixes it up. He does his own animatrix. We have this Predator Killer of Killers. And we were discussing right before we hit record on this thing. I don't remember this coming to theaters because, well, it did not hit theaters. Adam, do you have any idea of the origin of this? Why Trachtenberg decided to do this? Was it just a whole thing of like the Rakowskis? It's just like, I just want to give background on what this character is. Or was there some kind of modus operandi for what we're going to be discussing next week?
This, from what I understand and then what I think, and from what I understand, this was made because there was a couple different ideas for what to do after Prey. And they decided to go this route because they could. And there was still the Predator franchise after Prey was in flex because of what was going on with Fox, Disney, and if they were even going to keep this IP. Because there was some questions about what they could get in exchange for Predator and Alien at that time. I think, personally, this was in a response to everybody taking Prey and its time frame and going, ooh, do it in this time frame. Ooh, do it in that time frame. And I think he went, sure, this is fun. Let's do it. And this was originally, and it's very, very clear, this was going to be a series. this was going to be a couple different episodes, kind of like what Marvel does with What If and what they did with Marvel Zombies. This is multiple episodes of a TV series that at the end of the day got stitched together because Disney Plus can't stop shooting themselves in the foot, and they put it out in one fall swoop as a film instead of four or five episodes. And you could tell the way that this is done and the way each of these is episodic, This was going to be much like Marvel Zombies and What If. It was going to be an episode a week for whatever it was going to be, 4 or 5 weeks. And instead, they changed it up and it's an official film or movie.
All right. Well, I've already mentioned my association that I give to things like this is The Matrix. And we'll eventually get to that series. Hell, we did the big Keanu John Wick series. We cannot not discuss The Matrix eventually. Between 2 and 3, the Wachowskis released a set of animated shorts that were given kind of an origin to what The Matrix actually was, with mixed results. There's maybe one of those episodes that I kind of like, and everything else just kind of felt like filler. So coming into this, I really had zero expectations because of my memories of the Animatrix. Matt, what were your expectations going in?
Less than zero, to be perfectly transparent. I didn't want this in the format that it was going to be intended. I saw the forest of the trees, that this clearly was going to be a short miniseries that they condensed into a 90-minute movie. And I thought they would compromise that because we've gotten to the point with Predator where I sort of feel like they've exhausted all their options. You took it back to basics with Prey, not just with one versus one, but going back in time. And this seemed like they were trying to do the same thing, but couldn't come up with something for a feature length installment. And with everything that was happening with Fox and Disney and all that, they just took everything together because they didn't know if they'd get another shot. So I didn't have high expectations for this at all, especially with Prey notwithstanding. A lot of Hulu's output has not been great.
All right. And Adam, what were your expectations, sir? As the fan, you hear this is announced. What were your expectations going in?
I think I was definitely more anticipatory than either of you. I thought it could be a fun way to explore different time frames without committing yourself to it in a film. I was down for it. It felt very video game-esque in the way that it was being done. And when I heard the time frames that it was, I was like, wow, he literally went on Twitter or Reddit threads, took ideas and turned it into a screenplay. But I thought it would be interesting. And I thought animation, you could do some cool shit you would never get away with in movies. So I never thought of it as a film, as something you would put in theaters, but I was totally ready for it to watch, explore the lore, and do some cool shit.
Okay, well, does it pull off some cool shit? Let's get into the plots of these films, because yes, we are discussing plots. There are four stories in this series. The fourth, I guess, is a wraparound where we just kind of put them all in one, but Adam, that's accurate, right?
Yeah, each has its own, and then it's got a... you find out what the framing device is for. Yeah.
Okay, so let's dig right in. We start off with the 20th Century Fox logo, as well as a version of the Predator theme, before getting more goddamn words on the screen. How many of these fucking movies are we going to do that pulls this? I didn't think until we got to Blade Runner that we'd be discussing this many words on screen, but they all add up to how a Predator becomes the killer of killers. We then go to space as a ship heads to Earth, and we cut to a different ship as people are fighting for gold, and a leader gives some kind of speech and tells her son that if she, who is known as Ursa, were to fall tonight, he needs to avenge her.
Wait, Superman 2 Ursa?
You got the Ice Palace.
Yes, and this is what we'll come to know as the Shield. And we're going through three different... is it time frames? Because this is what, like the 1200s or something. And then we're going to get to the 1700s and eventually we're going to get to the 1980s or 70s. Adam, what'd you think about this framing device and how early we're starting here?
I didn't know we'd be going this early. So I find it interesting. I think I'm going to enjoy some of this more than a lot of people because that was part of what I liked best about Prey. I dig it. I think it causes major continuity problems with the films we've already gotten, with some offshoots that I guess no longer count, looking at you, AVP, but I like this. I do. I think it's kind of cool to set it in a different area and different era at the same time.
I was a bit surprised that they were going as far back as they were, but I was worried about this having the prequel problem. Are you muddying your timeline for the sake of putting another movie? That was my kind of my big fear. And I didn't want to hear, oh, well, this is not canon. as an excuse. If you're making a movie with Predator in your title, it's the same team. You can't just say it's a one-off. You know, it's got to be part of the franchise.
Yeah, that was kind of my fear too. We're seeing the results of a slaughter as they go through each body. She says that she's not the lucky one. They are the lucky ones, as she plunges an axe into somebody and tells her son to give him a merciful death. He hesitates, so Ursa finishes the job. The boy is sad that they haven't found Zorin, and this is when the ship arrives. So we're seeing the ship in the background as this is going on. Ursa tells her son what happened to his grandfather, as we cut to Ursa's dad getting slaughtered by Zorin, and he tells her that she will find strength in this if she were to avenge him. So we're setting up a lot of avenging here. We're setting up what this family's background is. And I will give this compliment. I find the fact that we're actually getting to know these people in as short a time as we are, you know, these are all about 20, 30 minute segments, to be very well done.
Quick, it's short. You didn't have to do it. I'm glad they did, because I care a little bit, even if I don't necessarily like the people that we get throughout. So it's well done. I do think that is the benefit of doing something serialized and animated like this. You can play around.
Ursa says something was born inside of her that day, and the only way to kill it is vengeance. We then cut to some Predator vision as we move to the next day. Ursa says that she's going to knock on the front door of her enemy as a fight breaks out, and her men are taken out by a ton of fools here. We even get one thrown into a fire. They enter the building as she beheads one guy using her shield, and this is when the Predator again turns on his Predator vision and follows her in.
This is when I can't believe that they okayed this being as bloody and ruthless as it is. That they allowed this with the budget that it is to do this was, I was like, I'll give them credit, because it sure as hell doesn't feel like Disney, you know, in their allowances for this kind of thing. I'm glad that it is brutal and vicious.
Ursa proclaims herself the enemy as she's told that she killed her own family, and the boy kills him on the spot. The Predator then enters as he's fending off one guy after another while bleeding his green blood. Ursa then attacks and a fight ensues, but Ursa is thrown off a cliff. She tries catching herself, but she falls all the way down. She swims up and sees the Predator above the ice. She pulls herself out of the ice and hides. And I think we discussed this when we discussed the dead zone. Every single time someone's stuck under ice and they can't find their way out, that is a huge fucking fear of mine. And even in animation, this fucking got to me.
The one thing that I missed, though, is because we know the history of Predator and heat vision and all that. And this iced out area up here with the Swede, the Vikings, you missed the opportunity to play with that.
Play with what? The fact that he can't see them in the ice?
Yeah, just that heat vision part of it. Like, okay. This is because we know it, and this is when the character should have been able to find out that there's something there. Just a little thing that's part of the monster.
Predator turns some kind of charge on in his arm, and the two once again have it out. A standoff occurs, and she takes out the ice, so they both fall in. A struggle happens as the Predator is chained down and has his own gun used on him to make him land right on the pointed rocks below. She makes her way up and tends to her son. He asks if she killed the monster as he dies in her arms. And that's the end of The Shield. Matt, how do you feel about how this first segment ends?
Well, I saw that title and I thought Michael Chiklis was going to show up at some point. I did get annoyed at the... there's always going to be a certain amount of pretentiousness on my part when I see the subtitles before every chapter, the shield, the sword, the bullet. I'm like, oh God, here we go. What's the fourth one going to be? The magic power ring? We're going to cut to like the future with the Predator. But I thought as like a first episode, I'm like, okay, you started out strong. And again, I'm surprised at how stylized the violence was. That's kind of my big takeaway. This went further into that than the Animatrix ever did.
But it ended kind of ridiculously strong. It's obvious the mother's going to die and the son's going to do the vengeance because that's how it's set up. And it doesn't do that, so it subverts it a little bit. And it shows that this mother, I'm going to call her Elsa because it's more fun, being that I watch this on Disney Plus for the fun of it, even though I have Hulu. Watching Predator movies on Disney, just don't at me, but that just, there's something that mops me there.
Well, it's funny you named her, you're calling her Elsa in a movie about revenge, because she's not going to be able to let this go.
Oh, God. We're doing those one day, Garrett.
Yeah.
but I do think it's a setup that I wasn't ready for it. I'm like, okay, look, I'm the target audience for this, but that doesn't mean my expectations were high. So it left me ready to go right into the next one, because I thought I was going to watch these as chapters and take a break in between. Instead, I was ready to go right on.
I'll be honest, that's how I watched it. I watched it one segment at a time. I did not give this a once through. It was just like, okay, a segment here. All right, time to stop and gather my senses. To segment here. I could not sit through all of this in one shot. Matt, did you do this all in one sitting?
I did, but I would have preferred watching this episodically, because I think there is a certain amount of, I don't want to say monotony that comes with this concept, but you're ultimately taking the same construct with just a different coat of paint every time. So there is a certain amount of repetition you're just going to feel based on how they're doing it.
For anybody that hasn't, I don't think you gain anything by watching it straight through. I don't know if you lose anything. Maybe you might, but I do think it could benefit from people watching it as episodes. I think it would give you a break that's needed.
We cut to leaves falling. So what I do like about this, we have different seasons, right? Adam, it might as well be the Stephen King novelette book, different seasons, because we're going to be different seasons each and every segment.
Don't you dare try to turn my Predator into your Stephen King.
That was the connection I made.
But yeah, we go winter, we go fall-ish, we go summer. Yeah, absolutely. I could give this four seasons.
We cut to leaves falling as we see a samurai practicing. Now, Adam, you being one who dived into Kurosawa earlier this year, you must have really been salivating at this, weren't you?
Not only that, but I do think this is the one that everybody was screaming for the most after Prey, was put it in feudal Japan. Ghost of Tsushima was coming out and was massive on games. Everybody go buy Ghost of Yodel, please. Yotai. So yeah, I think this was the one everybody kind of wanted to see the most. And yeah, I was ready for this in a huge way.
They make
Kurosawa, but as you said, yeah, I went into Kurosawa a lot recently, and I think I'm almost surprised that they did not give him $100 million and say, go do a samurai Predator film.
Oh, thank God they didn't do that.
I agree. I'm just surprised, because that is the one I saw the most online.
They make a paper boat as they bow to their sensei, and then we see that we're in 1609 Japan now. The two boys grab swords and go at it as their sensei looks at a helmet. One runs off, and this is the beginning of what we'll know as the sword. They bury their sensei as bells sound. They load up on swords as their sensei is set aflame, and we get some Predator vision at this point.
An issue I have, and it's every time I've watched, I've seen this a few times, every time I watch this one, I am bothered that it's not black and white or kind of that fake rotoscope that Star Wars Visions did with the Ronin, that episode, because I think this is when you make it look like those old style films. And if you're going to period it up, just go full bore.
They take out a soldier right in the Predator's line of sight as a ninja is caught. A fight ensues as one is knocked off the railing but is caught before he falls. More soldiers come in as swords are drawn, and what is this, tear gas that's thrown, I'm guessing?
Destruction and theatricality is your ally.
There you go.
It's
one of the guys reveals himself, and we have a one-on-one fight again right in the Predator's line of sight. They go at it a bit until one falls from above, and this is when the Predator attacks and more soldiers come into the fray. We get a beheading, a guy gets split in half, all the stuff we expect in Predator fights. And Adam, you have a point, man. I turned this on. I also watched this on Disney Plus. I was not expecting this much viscera, but here we are.
Let people be dissected. And you could tell that Trachtenberg was just like, you know, I am going to have fun with his weapons and really just push that extreme level. And I'm glad to see it. I love that the dialogue in this is almost non-existent, and it really just lets the sound work go through, because I think it helps this chapter, episode, whatever you want to call it. I think this looks and sounds great. I enjoy that the Predators have a different look in each era and that they're willing to, again, play with just that design and show that they're not always all the same.
I'm not overwhelmed. I'm not underwhelmed. I'm just whelmed. I feel like it's meeting all of my expectations, but I'm still waiting for that thing to really wow me, to make me feel like this was a worthwhile investment.
Yeah, I'm kind of with Matt in that I'm trying to see, I get why you would do this for money purposes, but I'm just trying to see if there is an end game here. Once he sees a guy hidden and tries making a run for it, he falls while hanging and is hanging some more as he's hearing the Predator from above. He's running on his house and slides down as he's getting pursued. This was kind of cool. I always like seeing this kind of stuff. Parkour, as they say. He falls some more until he's on the ground, and both men are now fighting the Predator together. We see a chain come out as the Predator's wrist weapon gets taken out. More sword play as one guy is taken down. The other one is hit by the chain as the Predator's weaponry is used against him, and he splat against a tree.
I think the fight is pretty awesome. Seeing the brothers team back up to do it, I think is really sweet. Also, I got to say, animated, this blood looks more real than it did in the Predator last week. But yeah, something about the way that this action is conceived and done. It's crazy that this thing was put out so quick, but this gives me the action pop that I want with it being in a stylized version. You can't really do live action. It's scratching an itch for me.
The two men then face each other again as a leaf falls and they split the Predator in half. They ensure the other that they are not alone as one falls. So that's the end of this story. Matt, what'd you feel about how this story ended? Did you like this better than the first one?
To a point, but I was kind of annoyed that, yeah, they win, but one of the two people dies. Like, they did the same ending two times in a row.
Yeah, I caught that too.
I do agree that it is redundant, but I think each of these chapters has some major redundancies in them. But other than that, though, I enjoy it a lot. And that ending to slice the Predator while it was invisible to see the reveal of the Predator blood is such good times.
So we cut to a boy driving his car and it breaks down on him. And it's apparently a broken engine. His dad concludes that he wants to be a pilot.
Oh, no, I was having solo flashbacks. I want to be a pilot. I'm like, no.
They fix the engine together. The dad tells the boy that he flooded the engine and that dreams are fuel. He can't fly because he can't make the engine work. He says that he's done bailing him out and he'll have to bail himself out as he gives his son a draft notice. And this is when we find out that this is the beginning of what we'll know as the bullet. We cut to Torres, the boy from the beginning, fixing an engine as he's asking to be put back in the sky. He gets in the driver's seat and the engine peters out. He says that he's not a mechanic, he's a pilot, and Captain Vandy says, it sure doesn't look like it to me.
Yeah, and I was sitting there going, that voice sounds really familiar.
Yeah.
And you talk about cheap stunt casting. They're like, okay, so we've had Bill Paxton be killed by a Terminator, a Predator, and an alien. Who else can we get to try to fit that mantra? And it's Michael fucking Bean who... He does not sound like he did.
No.
He sounds less interested in this than he did in Aliens Colonial Marines, which is one of the shittiest video games I've played at all. That game made me angry. And he sounds more checked out here.
He's more checked out here than he was in Alien 3, and he wasn't even in Alien 3 except for a picture.
The only checks he did was the one he cashed after exactly. The movie came out.
Adam, how do you feel about the setup?
It's amazing. Like, this is the one that felt like it was kind of mandated in a C-suite at Disney, if you know the way shit's been recently. But it does an amazing job, and it has some really cool shit that we've only seen in comic books. I also really like the setup. However, I don't know why this is taking place in Florida, and I'm trying to figure out how World War II was involved with our massive Florida air bases, but... Okay. I like this, though. The Michael Bean part I don't have a problem with that. I took that as a tip of the hat because he wasn't pushing any promos or anything. I like this one quite a bit. And I didn't think I would. Just because it felt modern. And I'm like, why would you bring this so close to the modern day after the other two? So I didn't think this would do anything special.
Yeah, to preview my thoughts, this one was the highlight for me. We see a plane come down thrash as the pilot says he never saw anything like it. And there were hooks in the sky. Torres grabs a piece of the ship and examines it. He says that he can't cut through it, but it almost pierces another pilot. And then we cut to the skies as an aerial fight ensues. Torres tries warning his superiors of another force in the sky that isn't an enemy. He says not everyone is up there, and he prepares to go up in his dinghy plane. He says give him a minute as he messes with the controls a bit and then pulls himself up. It's faltering near the ground, but he pulls the nose up, and his pilot partner says that he's going to die. He calls the squad and says that they're going to get smoked if they stay up here. He's warning to not engage with that ship, and he sees that it's indeed a Predator ship. And that's what's interesting about this. Prey tried playing with this, and I think they kind of faltered with it, in that the Predator's technology is way ahead of ours at this point, especially the further back we go. And we have this dinghy plane going against this monster Predator ship. So it is kind of an underdog story.
Massively. And I think it's taken that as kind of our inclusion in the war and everything else as well. And all of these supposedly are underdog stories with this massive part of technology and creatures from another world that can get here. I'm down for this. I'm, again, amazed at how fluid this feels. The sound design is amazing, and it just feels kinetic in the way that these scenes are drawn up and go together.
Yeah.
And I like seeing the ship. I didn't think I would. I thought I'd be rolling my eyes like I'm Matthew over here. with especially with the patch on this guy's eye, it makes me think of freaking Dennis Hopper in Waterworld, the way that he looks in that ship. But damn, I have fun with this one too.
Yeah, the sound design, I'll completely agree with you on. I was checking my back every 5 minutes because of all the sound going on. So, Torres is still warning the other pilots as one is killed in his cockpit before getting pulled apart. The ship takes out more planes as Torres' wing is now on fire. He gets out on the plane and is hanging literally by the wing as he tries putting out the fire. The ship hovers and fires a net. Torres is still trying to put the fire out as the engine falls off, and Torres figures out that the Predator can only see the heat. I don't know how he figures this out in all this chaoticness, but here we are. He gives a suggestion. Yeah,
go ahead. All right. So this movie keeps using the heat vision as a flaw in the same way that you can just put your fist up in front of a dinosaur.
He gives a suggestion of climbing as the higher they go, the least they will see. Predator is gaining on him, so Vandy sacrifices himself to buy Torres a little bit of time. Bye, Michael Biehn.
Disney, will you stop just flying up as high as you can in the atmosphere? Like, some executive gets paid every time they pull this trick.
It does happen quite a bit. Torres is behind the ship and tricks it into destroying itself. Torres is now in enemy grounds as he's outmaneuvering the ship and avoiding enemy fire. The Predator ship lands in the ocean. Torres tells the picture of his father that he did it as his ship is still in pursuit. He says it's time to flood the engine as the Predator sets its sight and Torres jumps off in time for his plane to slam into the ship. We cut to Torres in his shop. I'm assuming as he steps outside and is in the Predator's sights, theme plays and the ship rises as we cut to him waking up out of cryogenic sleep. All right, so that's the end of the bullet.
So I thought this was the ending.
I did too.
I thought they were going to end this on a cliffhanger.
You're not.
Yes, I'm the same exact way. I had no idea where this was going. And so, yeah, I was preparing to hit stop, and then I saw, oh, shit, we still have like 30 minutes left.
I mean, I'm glad that Fox brought back Fire in the Sky as a way to end this. It's the same shot. Again, this is one I was just... Dogfighting, World War II planes. I didn't think I'd like it, but I was really engaged. I had fun. It didn't play into the obvious racial tones that you thought it was going to. It's there, but it isn't. It doesn't beat you over the head like so many things nowadays where you know something's put there for a reason. The spaceship against our planes and fighters, is it ridiculous that there's any shot? Absolutely. But I had fun. It was a cool design. I liked it. And like I said before, and you did as well, I just didn't think I'd get a lot out of this chapter. And damn, I enjoy.
All right, so we see a Predator walk in and more follow to lead him and the others from inside the story that we just watched. They all walk out into some Predator arena, and Torres says that he doesn't think they're on Earth anymore. And boy,
really, what gave that away?
I don't know about you, but I was having Star Wars Episode 2 flashbacks at this point, where we had this big-ass arena. We're in a CGI world.
I was like, God. Oh, so this is where they took the ideas from the Kang Dynasty and put them...
You're right. This does feel like Geonosis.
Big time.
This was putting the no in Geonosis because I was starting to get worried. I was starting to get worried here.
I was too.
Now, the first, I think I've seen this entire thing three times. It wasn't until this time that they all wake up, because we start to, the beginning of or the end of each chapter, we reveal that they got these collars on their neck and we find out they're being flown here to this planet. Did they just keep Ursa for 400 years, 700 years, and they keep the Gaishen for 300 years and they just waited for Torres?
I know.
It's not until my third viewing that I'm like, this makes no sense that it would be hundreds of years in between and they're all just kept around for this. Other than it's a video game story and you can do this.
I guess their cable boxes finally went out and they're like, all right, we need some entertainment.
You're right. Are Predators time jumpers? That's a great point.
I mean, anytime you space travel, you have to, right?
Yeah.
But to have such massive... I mean, I get... You know what? I'm going to say by the end of this... Garrett, maybe Matt and I are going to have to explain it to you.
I think the ending might break that down.
No. I mean, because of the end credit.
Oh, that's right. Because of the credit scene that I didn't see. A Predator gets on top of the arena and talks about this being a fight to the death. Horn sound and a head blows up as Torres puts together that they have bombs in their necks.
Oh my God. Like, now they're starting to like run out of genuinely new ideas.
Yeah, because we have Running Man stuff going on now.
No, I was thinking Suicide Squad.
Oh, yeah, that too.
I was going to say Amanda Waller approved.
And, oh, my God. One thing about movies that really bugs me is when they mention the title in the film. And here we have Tora say that to become the killer of killers, we have to go into battle. Like, oh, my God, really?
Yeah, I was doing the Peter Griffin. Ah, you said it.
So we have the other two attacking him, and they're given things to help them as more creatures join the fray. Tora says that he has a plan to get them out before he's flung into the jaws of this predator beast. And like Pinocchio before him, he fights his way out of the beast. This is just weird, man. We're in weird territory.
Pinocchio is not the reference I would associate with.
I went Men in Black.
Well, what would you associate with, Matt? I mean, that's all I think of, because when they get in the whale, they have to fight their way out.
Well, they don't really fight. I mean, it's not like they gut the whale from the inside.
You know what I'm saying.
This is Tommy Lee Jones blowing his way up.
No, that's honestly what I was thinking of.
So I will say, this is, you know, I'm up to it, and I'm enjoying. I know this is going to make an appearance. I know it's going to. I'm absolutely prepared. But I almost needed to go for a walk when that fucking flintlock pistol showed up.
Yeah, I was going to say that. And also, I still do not like, and this movie does not sell me any further, I don't like these super predators. Like the Grendel King, I'm like, okay, that name is clever because the Viking says it and that ties into Beowulf. You know, that I'm okay with. But why do we have to keep having like these uber predators?
Yeah, I do like that he's got what looks like a cape, you know, almost, that he's got. Because, and yeah, the Grendel King, like, that makes sense. I don't need it to look like what they were trying to do with last week's film. Like, I need to forget that completely.
The battle against the beast ensues, and the players from earlier in the story, they are now going at it. The predator says that they will both die as Taurus pulls up a vehicle for them to jump on, and they all face the huge super predator, as Matt calls it, as the crowd goes mild. Where's the crowd here?
We need to see them betting on this.
Yeah, something. Exactly.
Need a predator. Fucking,
you're the same guy who. Yeah, you're the same guy who advocated for those two-headed announcers in Phantom Menace.
That's right, he was.
Oh, I was.
We have the shield coming into play here, as well as the sword, as Taurus is trying to get the fallen ship in the air. He does get the ship going as the other two struggle with the predator. Kenji gets his arm cut off as the ship is caught in the grip. Ursa says to not avenge her as she jumps down the chain and slams the shield into what's holding the ship down. So the ship escapes as Ursa is caught by the predators.
I hate that Taurus suddenly becomes freaking, I can fly anything.
Yeah.
He's freaking, he's Poe Dameron all of a sudden.
No, I was going to say he's Wesley Crusher.
We then see Ursa carried in a cryogenic chamber. And we're getting some alien-type music as we cut to... Who was this girl in the chamber they linger on? The one from Prey?
Yeah.
I am more bothered by... They take off in the spaceship. He mentioned something. And then there's suddenly like dozens of ships prepped, ready to go with crews that are only like 5 seconds behind them. Where are they going to go?
Yeah.
Yeah, it gets to this cryo chamber, which to me, at least this is... the way that I could be like, okay, so I guess they're just storing everybody, and then they randomly pull out three when they want for this entertainment. But yeah, so this is Mid-Thunder. This is her coming back from Prey.
Wow.
She's not the only one.
Did you stop there?
That's where I stopped.
Did you keep going?
I stopped there. Oh. Don't tell me they have Arnold here.
Oh, not only do they have Arnold, they have Danny Glover.
Oh, for fuck's sake.
So initially when this came out, it was her from Prey, and then it kept panning over and it showed Danny Glover. A couple months later, they announced that they had updated the ending, and it keeps panning over now, and you get that original Predator theme. And yeah, now it closes on supposedly what looks like Dutch. And I don't know, go back to the drawing board, because it doesn't really resemble Arnold to me. But yeah, now it shows that Dutch is there as well, which completely, I don't know.
Well, to me, this sounds like, Adam, remember when we would play those basketball games when we were kids? Michael Jordan would never get permission for his likeness. So, like, you would play somebody who was, like, number 99, but not actually Michael Jordan? That's kind of what this sounds like they went with here, where they have kind of a drawing of him, because I'm looking at it right now. Yeah, that's not Dutch.
No, that thing in there, that is not the Dutch. But this is also the problem. I hate this selective bullshit, because where is Adrian Brody?
Yeah, when you guys said that, I knew for sure that you guys were going to mention Adrian Brody.
All or nothing. I mean, they need a whole other pod for his nose, but...
With Olivia Munn, you know.
Olivia Munn. Oh, you want to harken back to that, huh?
Hey, if there's anything give me in that movie, that's it.
All right, speaking of gimmies, scale of 1 to 10, what do we give Killer of Killers? You know, I want to go against my norm here. I'll save the fan for a second. Matt, you go ahead.
For what it is, you know, this movie is the ultimate bar conversation of who would win in a fight, Predator versus blank. And they made a 90-minute movie out of it. And for what that is, the animation, I think, helps elevate this to a step above. Because I think this thing is very slick and pristine looking. I don't feel like they cheapened out. And animation let them be a little more fantastical with the gore, which helps differentiate it from the rest of this series. I mean, the first one's pretty graphic in certain parts, but this one operates more like a full-scale horror movie with the blood. It's pure pulp in a lot of ways too, which I appreciated. There is sort of a certain amount of, we're taking this seriously for the sake of reputation, but we're also going to have fun. But having said that, I also think the biggest strength, ironically, is the biggest weakness, where I found the last one, the battle, to be the weakest installment. You can't do an anthology and then all of a sudden you bring it all together. Like that kind of, it's very counterintuitive to me, and it soured me a bit, but not enough to knock this into a do not recommend. I think it's fine. I liked it. It was better than my expectations, but I also don't think it's the greatest thing ever seen. So I'm going to give it a 7, you know, a soft 7.
All right, 7 out of 10 from Matthew Gaudreau. Adam, what about you, sir?
I mean, I'm sure when Dan Trachtenberg was selling this to the execs in the office, somebody went, who is this for, Dan? It's for me. It's for the kid who grew up with a Predator poster on his wall that would smash his toys together, that has hoped one freaking day for a decent Predator video game. This is for me. And on that level, it delivers. It's not great. It's got some pacing issues because of its format. I do wish they would have released this weekly. I think it would have helped. I do think that's the better way to watch it. At the end of the day, though, the stories are interesting. I love the time frames that they put them in. The animation is beautiful. The sound design is awesome. Using language appropriate for the time periods, I really appreciate. So all in all, this is, you know, a really good watch. With Matt's point, I agree that the ending is kind of the most lackluster aspect. It doesn't close itself off well. The fight and the battle, I think, is kind of cool. You get some enjoyment there. It doesn't stick the landing, and that hurts. But there's much worse ways to spend 90 minutes. God knows there's much worse ways in this retrospective to spend half this amount of time. But it's a good time, not a great time. I actually got this exact same score as Matt. I land on a 7, a stronger 7. Like it's a good way to go. But watch this episodically. And again, I do think you could actually have a really fun video game where at the end of each section of it, maybe you're transported into a different time frame. And I think that's what this is. I'm glad Trachtenberg is having fun with this series and not taking it too seriously.
All right. So you land on a 7?
7.
Okay. Well, the big compliment I will give this is that it's better than The Animatrix. That being said, though, I couldn't help but think of Adam during this, because after just the onslaught of me and Matt just kind of sitting back and letting him unleash on Shane Black's The Predator, I'm glad that Trachtenberg came in and made something for him. At the same time, I'm not the big Predator fan. I'm the Alien fan. So while it's cool to see the origins of these characters, I'm not sure how I feel about seeing the origins being displayed with this character. At the same time, there are worse ways to spend an hour and a half. I did get into the third story of this. How it all comes together, I will completely agree with you guys. It feels redundant. It feels like, all right, we've seen this before, so we have to have all of them come together and fight them. No, we don't. I would have been just okay with these three stories and leave it at that. So I want to land on a 6. I didn't have as good of a time as both of you. However, that's not to say that I don't recommend fans of the series check it out, because if anything, and this is why I love doing these podcasts, is that we have proven that the fan is here and the fan really enjoys it. So if you are a fan of this character, I definitely recommend checking out. I'm just, after the first film, I'm just haven't been a big fan of this character. So yeah, I land on a 6 out of 10 for this. Now, guys, the movie is a couple weeks away from being released. The new movie I'm talking about is Predator Badlands. We are a couple weeks away from that release. Matt, what are you expecting when we finally get to Predator Badlands?
I honestly don't know. And the reason I say that is, having seen the marketing, I'm worried they are just using this to springboard another Alien versus Predator crossover. And I don't want that. I want that to be a natural evolution, not something that you rush to. Because that was one of the mistakes with the first time they tried it. It wasn't organic. It was like this Frankenstein thing, and I don't think they pleased either fan base. A little worried they're going to do the same thing here. I saw the runtime. That makes me happy. It's under 2 hours, which I am always shocked by nowadays. But I can't say I'm optimistic. But I'm also not, I can't go in saying, well, it's probably going to suck, because I've been surprised by the last couple of movies.
All right. Adam the Fan, what are you expecting when we get to Predator Badlands next week?
I don't know. Look, I want to be hyped and excited for this. What I've seen thus far doesn't have me chest pumping racing. Like, you would think I'd have my tickets ready to go. I don't. I haven't decided what format I'm going to see it in. I tried to stay away from trailers, but I haven't been able to, and I don't like the look of the Predator in this. I think they changed the voiceover at the last minute, because you cannot tell me that wasn't a female Predator design and then they changed it. I think the most exciting thing for me is Elle Fanning in this, and I never thought I'd say that. I don't know, but maybe that I really don't know everything about this movie is what I have to be excited about. We'll see. But this is obviously a major departure. You know, I don't know if I want my antagonist to be my protagonist. I just don't know if I want that. I don't know if I want that flip. I don't know if this is going to look good enough. I don't know if it's going to be big screen worthy, but we'll see. And to Matt's point, clearly we at least exist in the Alien universe, but I just finished watching Alien Earth, so that kind of makes sense. Obviously, Disney wants some synergy. I'll be there. I'm excited I get to see a Predator movie in the theaters, and I think I'm going to take the opportunity to watch the double feature of Prey and this in the theaters so I can see that in theater as well.
One last thing I forgot to mention, and I should put this out there. I don't give a flying fuck that it's PG-13. If it's a good movie, it's a good movie.
Yeah, I hate that as soon as that got pushed that fucking the media storm started. No shit, it's color of blood makes a big difference.
So we're having Alien versus Predator arguments all over again. Wow.
Yeah, but let's not forget, of any of us, I enjoyed that one.
You did.
Elf, yeah, because the Predators were treated better than the aliens.
Exactly. Elle Fanning's in this?
Oh, yeah.
Wow.
She played
well, you know what? I'm not going to spoil what she is, but okay. Yeah.
All right. Well, you know what? After seeing the first trailer, because I haven't seen the second trailer yet, all I could think of is Clive Barker's Rawhead Rex. That's not what I want to think about going into a Predator film. So the design doesn't really excite me. The storyline doesn't really excite me, just from what I've seen. Now, I haven't seen hardly anything, and I don't know exactly what the story consists of, but just from what they've released, I have no idea what the expectations are. But like Adam, that might be a good thing. Maybe me going in completely cold is what is going to benefit it. So I have no idea what to expect, but like Adam, I'm glad that we're getting another Predator in theaters. So
I'll say I've not gotten a chance to introduce my children really well to the characters, and I think I get a chance finally to take this opportunity. That makes me excited.
All right, well, until next week when we get to Predator Badlands, guys, let's go podcasting.
Why do you call it the Predator?
It's a nickname. You know, the data suggests that it tracks its prey, exploits weakness, seems to, well, enjoy it. Like a game.
Thank you for listening to this edition of the Three Men in a Retrospective podcast, exclusively here on Percolated Media.
Please do not touch anything.
Come back every Friday as new retrospective reviews are posted weekly on your favorite podcast platform of choice.
I'm sorry.
We're not dead yet.
What the hell are you?
If you like this retrospective review, check out our archives at percolatedmedia.net. as we have tons of franchise reviews such as the Alien film series, Star Wars, Indiana Jones, the ongoing Marvel films, films of the DC universe featuring Superman and Batman, the Mission Impossible film series, the Jaws franchise, the Lethal Weapon films, the John Wick franchise, the Jurassic Park and Jurassic World film series, the Mad Max film series, Avatar,
and so much more.
I wouldn't wish that on a broke dick dog.
Instead of complaining, maybe I should help.
A Three Men in a Retrospective podcast is produced by Garrett and Matt.
Do you think you could have found something bigger? The Three Men in a Retrospective podcast is edited by Garrett.
Hey, you know what? Fuck this. This is bullshit, man. I want a gun.
Scheduling done by Matt.
It's something. Makes Cambodia look like Kansas.
The Three Men and a Retrospective podcast is voice narrated by Adam.
What the fuck?
This podcast is not affiliated with any film studio or network, and all opinions expressed on the Three Men and a Retrospective podcast represents the opinions of that individual. Any similarities to any and all things associated with the films in question are strictly coincidental.
My men are not expendable.
The Three Men in a Retrospective podcast is an independently produced podcast, and it's thanks to the support of listeners like you that help keep it that way. Please like and subscribe, as well as leave a review on your favorite podcast platform of choice.
This stuff will make you a goddamn sexual tyrannosaurus, just like me.
This podcast is a Percolated Media production. Copyright 2025, and any and all sound and audio clips are used for entertainment purposes only.
Billy! The other day, I was going down to my girlfriend. I said to her, "Jeez, you got a big pussy. Jeez, you got a big pussy." She said, "Why did you say that twice?" And I said, "I didn't." See, it's because of the echo.
Okay, was this released in theaters?
No.
Okay. No. Okay. So I finally get one streaming thing that I'm okay with. But technically it connects to the franchise massively if Garrett watched the post-credit sequence.
There was a post-credit sequence on this one too?
Actually, there's one, and then they updated it and added and extended it.
Jesus Christ.
I'll get to it. It's not worth watching, okay. But it's 30 seconds.
The battle against the beast ensues, and the attendant earlier in the film, in the story, and the players from earlier in the story, they are now going at it.
I hate that Torres suddenly becomes freaking, "I can fly anything."
Yeah.
He's Poe Dameron all of a sudden.
No, I was going to say he's Wesley Crusher.
Who the hell's Wesley Crusher?
Star Trek.
Oh.
Who's Wesley? Okay, well, you know his mom.
We didn't see Ursa.